All right, well, my name's Reese Alley. This is another episode of the SCA Construction Podcast. Just as a disclaimer, we did change the name from Build With Purpose as it got mistakenly taken, and it was much easier to control the color scheme. So if you're listening to the last couple ones, that is why. But this is the podcast where we talk about how to build real value in a career, in a business, whether you have a small business or you are in a company that you are at right now, where you're trying to grow, you're trying to be valuable and condone that to other areas of your life. We're trying to talk about the life lessons and issues and spiritual aspects and lessons we've learned along the ways. So today, one of our internal guys is Michael Woodall. He's one of our superintendents, been with us for a long time. And we're going to talk today about just his background and general life experience and what has made him a really impactful person in our business. And maybe how you can take some of those lessons as well. So, Michael, how are you?
Great. Doing awesome, Reese. Thanks for having me. This is exciting. It's a privilege to be with you today.
Oh, I appreciate that. So, just, you know, I know you really well now at this point, but hopefully I'll learn something new. And you just tell us a little bit about your background. I mean, you had a stone business for a while. You worked for big companies in the past. Obviously, we've been with SCA longer than I've even been around SCA. So just explain that a little bit. Where'd you start?
Yeah. Well, moved here from Ohio, 16 years old. First job was Church's Chicken here. The guy that owned the restaurant owned two franchises. Over some time, he sold them and wanted to go into selling plants. He wanted a nursery. And he asked me to go with him. So I was 18 years old when this happened. I was the only one he asked to go. You know, I took the job very serious, went master merchant, which is just their little designation. You know, you get little badges on your name plate and everything. And so, we went selling plants, and back then water gardens were very popular, right? And so we started selling water plants. And then in order to store them, we had to have ponds. So we started experimenting building ponds for the plants. And eventually the business grew into water garden business. So we started building ponds for people. And it turned into, well, I need a retaining wall next to the pond or a little walkway. So we started doing stone masonry. And we learned it together. So I'm 18, he's 40. He's reading books, telling me what the books say. I'm reading books, telling him what the books say. And we're going at it. And we did that for years. Both of us got really good at Landstone. I worked with him until, I think, 98. By then, I had Avery, my one son, and my little girl. And broke off, started my first business, Woodall's Specialized Stoneworks. And I named it that because we had really gotten into a niche where we did things with stones no one else could do, really. You know, we would always say we don't cut corners, we cut curves, you know. So we would take stones and they, you know, we do all kinds of stuff with them. And it really turned into a nice business. You know, it was all pretty much high-end clients,
all residential, or
all residential. Yeah, we weren't doing any commercial back then. And at Woodall's, I did something with John Gray, but my company was all residential, and we did a lot of ponds, you know, just fireplaces all across the board. And then we got into some foundation work, blocks, brick, you know, we started exploring. And then, you know, interesting point in my life, was doing okay, you know, financially, but my focus turned to more towards spiritual things. So, you know, young family, my wife had a business also. She's done hair her whole life, had salons and stuff throughout our life. So we were both very, very busy, and we decided to scale back, like just simplify. At the time, I thought the best move was you shut down the business and go get a job. Right. So when I come home, I'm done with the day.
You turn it off.
Yeah, you know. So I went to work for Precision Concrete. When I went there, they were at their 20th year. I remember the the fleece that they gave out that year for Christmas had the 20th.
How big is this company?
At that time, it was, I think, $30 million a year or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Started out, though, with one truck, one crew, one guy. You know, they were doing their thing, man, but they were always doing commercial. And when the Olympics came to Atlanta is when he kind of blew up, you know. I'm in 96. So by the time I got there, they were doing pretty good. Big company based in Alpharetta, a three-story office building, you know, maybe six crews, own shop. They even had a place where that did the repairs on the equipment called CSI, I think it was. It was owned by Precision, but it was a separate company. So they were making money. They were paying themselves to fix their equipment.
Ribbing each other off. Exactly. You know.
And now you could also, you know, go in there as an employee and get whatever tools you need, put it on your account. It was all integrated. Big, you know, corporate experience. Really learned a lot. You know, the tools that were available were endless. The systems in place, I really gained an appreciation for systems at Precision. Safety, you know, we're working at places like the CDC and prisons, you know, so safety was always the top of the list. And so took that knowledge, because really that wore me out. We're pouring at 2 or 3 in the morning every night, you're driving to Alabama or Augusta. I said, you know what, I'm going to go back in business, but I'm just going to do it differently. So started another business, and that was Dimensional Masonry. And it was more focused, less on stonework, more on blocks, foundations, concrete, because I had learned so much about concrete. And that was a little less stressful. I was more mature. It's going pretty good. Then I met Tommy Smith, owner of SCA. And I think our first job, big job, was Brad Long, unless you know him. Whole backyard stonework, right up through December, I think, of 2015 is when we were wrapping that job up. Work, you know, as Tommy became my main, so basically I was subbing for him, or he became my main source of employment. And eventually closed Dimensional and got hired on at SCA. I think that was maybe 2018.
That's when SCA was still doing a lot of landscaping, stuff like that, definitely in general.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, off and on a little bit. But here lately, the last 4 or 5 years, full throttle, seeing the company grow leaps and bounds. It's been exciting to be a part of it. And here we are.
And so to go back, you know, rewind a little bit back to when you had your own business twice. And the lessons learned from that, and you know what that looked like, you know, whether it was residential or commercial or whichever field it was in. A lot of our people here today have ironically owned their own business at some point, you know, whether it's our accountant, me, you, and general most of the company at this point. What do you think makes the difference between you hire somebody on, whether they're on your crew or you see another person get hired on our company, where they have owned their own business before at any capacity, could have been for 6 months, could have been for 5 years, and there's differences in the two. But what qualities did you take away from that? But also, what qualities would you see difference in someone that came from having a business versus, you know, maybe just an employee had it at any capacity at another company?
Yeah, that's a good question, because it definitely makes a difference. You know, having been a laborer, starting at the bottom, having been a part of a big company, corporate style company, and then going, you know, owning a company gives you a broad perspective of what business is really about. You know, it's not just about the services or the goods provided. It's about people. And so, you know, you got your low level employee. He has a certain perspective, certain things he wants to get out of his job or his association with the company. But then you got corporate style companies that, since they're so large, they need systems in place to manage things. And then you have, as an owner, you know, it's the bottom line. Like, are we making enough money on each job or not? And if we're not, why not? Right. And then you got the client. So, and that's where it really comes into play with those three different perspectives, help you be like a translator of sorts, right? Like a liaison between the guy in the field, the management, the client, and making sure that everybody's expectations are met, right? You, it's like an orchestra. And when a person comes on and they don't really have the different perspectives, then there's obvious limitations in what they can provide, whether the value they can bring. And it's not something you can teach. You know, you can talk until your face turns blue about, you know, as an owner, you know, don't waste material or don't tear up tools, you know, but until you've had to buy tools and repair tools and, you know, have to have a tool to get a job done and don't have it and what that means for you and your family and them eating dinner that night. Without that perspective, there's just going to be some gaps there. But having that perspective, I think, is what brings real value. And that's what I see, you know, with our management team. Everybody has been there. They can appreciate it. Even if you get a little bit of, you know, a knee-jerk, you quickly remind it, you know, it comes back to you real quick. So.
And with that being said about the difference of, you know, maybe it doesn't come full circle if you haven't been in that position before and you've had to have the tool that ended up getting left off the truck or fell off on 75 and exploded and then it, you know, comes back. If someone does want to own their own business, but maybe they just really want to be entrepreneurial within a company, I feel like with us, we've really tried to emulate that and create an environment where you can be entrepreneurial, you could have your own ideas and things like that. And working at Precision before and now working here, what would you say the main difference is and how that affects your quality of life of being in a place and in a position where if you do have an entrepreneurial spirit, you can be with a company that emulates that and has those opportunities? And how would you really spot that? Like if someone's listening to this and they're trying to, you know, hop ship or go to a new company, maybe they want to start a business. What would you tell them to look for in a company, whether it's the management team or they're interviewing for a field position? What would you tell them to look for to try and see if that's going to be a company where their voice could actually be heard?
Well, I would say at Precision, you know, I remember distinctly going through their onboarding process. It was a group setting. You know, they had a bunch of us in there. Bunch of videos, bunch of safety stuff, you know, it was like an assembly line. It was kind of funny. Like we all just in line getting our equipment and hard hats and, you know, just, and you know, you at the time you're like, man, this is great. I'm part of a big deal.
Yeah. In corporate.
Yeah. And, but in time you realize that you stay there, you stay just a part of the assembly line. You know, you're just, as people say, just a number, you know, literally had an employee number. And that's how I was referred to, you know, with everything I did. But you don't get a chance to talk with many people outside of your direct lead person, your supervisor. At SCA, one difference, any company like SCA, I think when we're doing onboarding here or interviews, they may not even realize it, but they're talking to the COO, the CEO, the estimators, every level of the company is like right at their disposal. And that's one key indicator of what kind of company you're going to be a part of, right? Because the only reason why a CEO would put himself in a position, I think, to interact that way is because he's looking for who's our next top guy, who's our next management guy. I need to put my eyes on this guy because we don't know who's coming in. You know, I guarantee you Precision missed out on a lot of good, talent, not giving them the time of day, you know. So being able to have access, I think, to the management part of a company would be an indicator that, you know, you probably have room to grow.
The one thing we've been trying to do, obviously even a huge part of it, is creating an environment that attracts someone that we would want to have in those values. So someone that is entrepreneurial, someone that wants to expand and use their ideas to create a better future for their business, more opportunities, you know, maybe it's more staff, maybe it's more business or more leads or sales or better operations and things like that. But if you had to nail it down, so we have the three core values that spell dig. It is phenomenal. It is diligence, integrity, the golden rule. If anybody's seen our website, you guys know what I'm talking about. But relative to another company, let's say company A that has 45 different core values, they rotate them all the time. Nobody really understands what's going on. And generally, they're just something that's there as a company initiative, but not something they really abide by, versus, not to put us on display, but we really try hard to emulate those values. Everybody knows what they are. Everybody knows how they work in our business. And it's obviously backed by a little bit more of a faith-based situation. So anytime we make a decision, whether we're starting a meeting or leadership meetings or our monthly meetings, we start with a prayer. We try and put that at the forefront and put our faith as a pillar to guide our decisions, anywhere from hiring to firing to the jobs we take to how we deal with customers and how we deal with the issues that naturally come up with a company. What is your take on what those do as an effect and how they, you know, create a rudder to go off of and make decisions?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I think, you know, the whole premise behind a core value is it sets a foundation for a company, for a team. And of course, a company is not the name on a billboard or on the back of a shirt. The company is the group of people that are working together with this one purpose. And so core values, you know, they're a galvanizer, you know what I mean? Brings everybody together, same focus. And of course, we got diligence. You know, you cannot succeed if you're not detail focused, detail oriented. You got pride in your work. You keep your word. Things like that take you a long way in your personal life and as a company. But then integrity, we're going to treat you the way we would treat our mom. Like if I was doing some work for my mom, that's how you're going to get treated. I'm going to give you the right product or the right solution for whatever problem you got. I'm going to be honest with you about it. Sometimes you may not like what I have to say. Right. It may be costly, but this is really going to fix your problem. But of course, then the golden rule is, you know, it's golden, you know, and you treat people the way you want to be treated. And that is the key really inside the company too. When people, you know, if you got 45 core values, that's pretty much every one of them just listed out. Right. I mean, every nice little word you could think of. But when you think you give God something to bless when you live by the golden rule, you know, you think about success, and in today's world, success is measured by money, usually income. And usually when you think about faith, it's not always about money, you know. Sometimes some people even feel like they, you know, like they say, the love of money is the root of all sorts of injurious things. But the funny thing is, you know, living by Bible standards puts you in a place to where you succeed and make money. It's just like a byproduct from it. And so you cannot be successful as a company without having faith as the core of your operation. And so I think it's imperative that the golden rule is a part of any company's core value.
And can I ask a question? So I just did a podcast, Tommy, as well, which y'all can check that out. It should be the one right before this, depending on how they get posted. But we had a whole podcast this morning on talking about, you know, how to not sell your soul in the pursuit of a career and what that means. And so for a lot of people that are looking, they could be a young person, it could be someone at any age, really, but they're trying to put a focus on that thing they want. Or maybe it's my favorite, which is absolutely the worst, is, you know, trying to build a business or make a bunch of money so they can start dating. And so they can, so they could find the girl. It's like, man, that's so backwards. But for the person that's trying to get the, you know, that next thing or the next business or the next person and the next relationship, and it's just the next, having something to where your values are based on those principles. Maybe, you know, these person listening to this, maybe they're not faith-based, they don't go to church, maybe they're not there at that point in their life. But for someone that hears us talking about that kind of thing, it sounds very vague. It sounds very distant in the clouds. You know, you talk about faith and you talk about, you know, these principles, and it's really not tangible for the people listening. But for the person that is curious and, you know, sees that sense of peace in us and in other people and are maybe looking for that sense of fulfillment, what would you say to them as a starting place? And maybe they're not in a situation, in an environment where that is a standard of excellence. Where would you say to look?
I'm going to go with the broad, vague answer. I'm going to say the Bible. Okay. But it doesn't really start with just opening up the Bible. It starts with the inner person, you know, who you are, really having a positive view of other people, right? It helps you to have a positive view of yourself. It makes you, it opens you up to positive influences. Thinking about, like you said, it's backwards to get the job, to try to get the girl. You have to focus on how am I going to be a whole person? And now I'm going to succeed in every aspect of my life, including this company I'm with. And so it does start with, you have to recognize your purpose, right? And everybody wants to know what their purpose is. Everybody has a purpose. But ultimately, our purpose is to glorify God. He made us. And so glorifying him and basically imitating him, like showing people what he's like through our conduct and our speech. And when you start there, really it's an inside job. When you start working on yourself, then you become teachable. Then the words in the Bible start to have an effect. Just thinking about, you know, the purpose, like everybody, how extraordinary each person is. And it's really helped me view people in a positive way. I asked ChatGPT. I was like, so look, give me the percentage or the probability is the word I'm looking for of my existence. You know, considering all of the coincidences that had to happen.
Yeah.
All of the people that had to meet in at any specific moment, right? And it was very interesting. It broke it down for me.
It's dangerous to start asking a question. It'll tell you an answer.
So in short, it broke it down. It was funny. It said, you know, the final analysis is this. Your existence is mathematically close to zero in probability. But it really just says, but yet here you are. It says you are extraordinarily rare and precious, so act like it. So a computer is telling me,
yeah, ChatGPT is saying that
to value me, for me to value myself.
We got to start believing it.
Yeah. And you know, it was like, it's like winning every lottery that has ever existed in the entire world every day for 1,000,000 years. That's, you have a higher chance of doing that than existing, right?
Jeez.
Exactly. But not just me, right? You, every person in this building, everyone is extraordinarily unique and precious. So now when I'm focusing on that, when I'm walking around on this earth, whether I'm doing business, I'm teaching, I'm learning, whatever it is, now I'm more in tune with my purpose, right? I'm more in tune with other people and their value. And that transcends into business. It transcends into your personal relationship. So you have to as Tommy would say, build people to build a business. And I know we're coming from the perspective of a company and how to, you know, be successful, but it really doesn't start there. It starts on the total opposite end of that spectrum.
And banking on that, so this is the other thing. We talked about this as well, and, you know, I heard Tommy's perspective. But for the person that is, you know, chasing income, and when I say chasing income, there's a balance between ambition and, you know, trading too much for the cost of something else, whether it's your family life or your relationships, your free time. And at some point, you have to have a certain amount of money to survive. You know, you need the basics. But at some point, there is a you know, fallout in the return of how long things take and what you have to give up to get there. And so for the person that is looking to be ambitious and they want to work 6 days a week, 7 days a week to go that route, and maybe it's not, maybe it's just a super intensive and all consuming, where should the line be between ambition and chasing after that career, that success, to maybe it's to support your family? But where do you make the trade-off and recognize the difference of when something's falling off in the wrong direction, out of balance, when maybe you are making a lot of progress, but something else in your life is falling out of bounds, like your family or relationships, and how should you balance those?
Well, that would be the line. That would be the indicator when pursuing a career, your family is paying the cost for that, or your relationships with others, or even your personal sanctity, just, you know, killing yourself. You know, you have to have time for refreshment. You have to have time in God's service, you know. So for me personally, when I'm making a business decision, and, well, you know, the scripture said you can't be a slave for two masters, right? You just can't do it. You got to choose. And so whenever secular things are getting in the way of the more important things like family, spirituality, that's when you know. If you can manage it, there are a lot of very wealthy, very faithful people, right? And honestly, oftentimes wealth comes with being faithful. And so that would be the indicator. But the way to balance it is, you know, I can't help but quote Jesus' words. You know, he said, pursue first the kingdom, and then all these other things will be provided for you. What can you do for God first? Right? That's your priority. That should be your priority. In any, that's what we're here for. Like, that should be the priority. Even in business, you know, every day while I'm at work, I'm talking about God. And I know you do too. You know, what is my example showing this person about God in the way I'm doing my work, or to the customer, you know? So the moment that you start to let secular things overshadow spiritual things is when the problems start. It's not the money. It's really not the money. You know, like a lot of people quote that verse, the love of money, or no, money is the root of all evil, but it's not. It's the love of money. Like, so if you love God, you can't love money too equally, right? So as long as your priorities are focused on how you treat other people is what it really comes down to first, everything else comes.
Just, you're probably one of the best examples of this, at least the most studied in the faith of anybody that's on our team. And, you know, not that the most academic is the one that has the best relationships, things like that, but you have a really good understanding. You've been looking at it about as long or longer than anybody else. And so in what we do, and I use this example this morning, but in construction, it's mundane. We don't do anything crazy. We lay pipe and concrete and asphalt. It's not necessarily going out and being into a necessary ministry, or it's not a volunteer act of kindness. Like, we're getting paid to do it. We're here. And obviously, I know you're very involved in ministry outside of work. But for the person that feels called to faith, that they feel called to make a difference and really set a great example for people in a way that is a positive impact, in something like construction, where it's not what your mind goes to when you think of ministry, it's not what your mind goes to when you think of, man, I'm going to make such a big impact what can I do in my career? Well, I'm going to do construction. I'm going to lay pipe and concrete. But it's not what your mind goes to. But for you, being in our business and in construction as a whole, like, how could someone set an example? Like, how do you set an example in a way that on the other side, there's a guy that maybe doesn't have those values, doesn't have the faith, doesn't have those principles and values? What difference is there of that guy on the site versus you on the site? And how does that make the world a better place?
Yeah, I can use some examples from Precision. So construction is an easy one because, you know, there's a stereotype that comes with construction workers.
There's a lot of lost people in construction.
Exactly. And, there's a lot of, debauchery and foul language, bad habits, smoking, drinking, all kinds of stuff that, most, especially concrete guys, I'll say that. And so it was literally it's like your aura. Like I have like a rough look, but they quickly, wait, he was just
different.
Yeah, this is a different type of guy right here. And they always said I spoke proper. I don't speak proper. I just didn't cuss. Like every other word wasn't a cuss word. And the way, they were always, aggressive and just seemed angry all the time, and I wasn't. And, I'm like, so in construction, the biggest difference, I guess, is how you treat people. It's whether you're in construction or not. It doesn't really matter. Like, I know we're trying to relate it to construction, but it doesn't have, I could be working at McDonald's and it would be the same effect. I could be sweeping floors and cleaning toilets. It's the same thing. So for me, it's because I'm well studied and I'm always preaching even at work. I know my example has to fit and it keeps me in line. You know what I mean? It keeps me focused. I cannot be preaching and then the guys see me, scrolling, looking at, naked girls on Instagram and, listening to crazy music and or whatever. I have to set a good example. So, I try not to be preachy, but I'm always teaching. Half the time, the guys don't even know that I'm teaching them something, right? I'll ask a lot of questions. So why are you doing it that way? Or why did you talk to them that way? Or couldn't you have, what do you think you could have did? And ultimately, it helps them to see, he's teaching me, how to be a better person. It's not about work anymore, So it just really comes down. It's just about people. It comes down to people, how you treat people, how you teach people, how you learn from people. You have to listen, it really doesn't matter what company you're with. That's the person you got to be.
And so obviously we're trying to attract more team members, more staff. We're growing like nuts. For the person that gets on your team, what values are you looking for?
I'm looking for someone who is teachable, right? A lot of times people, young guys will come on or whatever, and they want to show you what they know, I would much rather you slow down, ask some questions, watch and learn, and take some initiative, right? One guy on my crew, if I walk away for 30 minutes, you got one guy waiting for me to come back to tell him what to do next. You got another guy, he makes a decision and does something. I come back and say, okay, that actually was not the best decision in this scenario, but thank you for making a decision. So I want somebody that is, they're trying to look at the bigger picture, anticipate the need, and then try to satisfy the need as opposed to just waiting for instruction. But they need to be teachable, accountable, and reliable. I mean, goodness, to not show up.
Showing up on time.
Yeah, it's such a simple thing, but it's like everything. Just come, just be there. I'll teach you what you need to know, but I can't teach anything if you don't show up. you know. And then being positive, you know, being a good influence on the people around you. You know, that's important for me. You know, we've had some guys that just had just a cloud, you know, and they just brought a weird vibe, you know, and it definitely can affect a team. So those are the basic things I look for. It's not always skill, because you can teach skill, but you can't teach people how to be, you know, humble and teachable, you know.
Those are just built in from the beginning. So for the person to, you know, close this out a little bit, for the person that is listening to this, let's say they're at a company and they see that there is opportunity. It maybe they don't have the values that we've been talking about, but how can that person specifically, if they're a field person, if they're a, you know, foreman or a superintendent or whatever the position is, how can they take steps now to move forward in that company and to get recognized and to have more responsibility and more opportunity? Regardless of where their skill set is, everybody's going to start at a different place. But what can they start doing now that will make them more valuable to get those opportunities?
It's personal growth. You know, leadership, it's this human connection, right? People have, you know, body language. There's the unspoken things are the things that are the loudest. And so, it's not about who's gonna, you know, be the squeaky wheel, making the most noise, who's the loudest all the time. It's the person that is consistent, positive, you know, whole. You know, you can sense a person that's grounded. And so you gotta focus on yourself to succeed, not outward things. It's not external. It's internal. And so, you know, because it's like, if you want to succeed in this company, I need you to fulfill this part of the contract. I need you to make this number. And I need you to complete this many jobs. That's not going to do it. Now, you might do that, but that's short-lived. What's going to really make you successful or valuable is the inner self. Like, it's just no way around it. And so, it's not going to be God for everybody. It should be, but it's not. But whatever it is that makes you whole on the inside, makes you a you know, solid person, that's what's going to stand out. People notice that stuff. You know, you a person walks in a room and they don't have to say a word.
You just have got it together.
You know, they got it together. And that is attractive. That's going to make the owner or the management person interested and want to invest in them. A person can come with all kinds of stuff spread across their resume. If they don't have that thing, they're not going to make it. They're not going to get it, you know. And I'm a firm believer in it, you know. And it's time tells the story, you know, and that's the other part of it. Sometimes people come in, you know, gangbusters, and they look great, you know, on paper. They good gift of gab, and you know, you sold. And then in just a short while there, you realize what you got. But that person that is kind of in the background, you know, slowly making progress, and all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, we got something real here, you know. So, you know, you can't rush it. You gotta, it's an inside job. If a person wants to be successful in a company, they have to work on themselves. And it's a constant thing, you know, you're never done, but that's just where it starts. It's where it starts.
Amen to that. Well, any closing thoughts? I think we're going to wrap it up. We're probably about 40 minutes here.
Okay. Well, I one thing I appreciate about SCA is the interest in the, not just the person, but the core of the person. And like the questions you're asking me, you're asking me, how can a person, what do they need? You want them to know what they need to do. So the fact that we are, as a team, every member in our company, from the lowest guy to the CEO or the COO, how can we help them grow? And that's what sets us apart. That's what sets us apart. As Rotez would say, this is SEA and that's what we do, right? So I would close with that. You know, just I appreciate being a part of something that's great. Really do.
Amen. Well, if you guys have any questions, comments, or concerns, just send us a message on our website, SCA.construction, or leave a message in the comments below. You guys have a great day.